What's up, everybody? It's Megan here with your Friday episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. We're going to be talking about some financial topics today. And today's topic is going to be, what the heck is the difference between 1099 and W-2? Is that a decision that you should be making when you're looking at job opportunities? Is that a decision your employer is making, and why? And what's the differences between the two? Financial planning. There are definitely some financial planning impacts. There are some laws we've got to stay or comply with between one or the other. And there's some risks that we have to take into account. So I brought Kathleen Boyd on this podcast episode with me today. Thank you for joining so much, Kathleen.
Of course, Megan. Thank you so much for having me.
And Kathleen is one of the planners on our team, and you work with a number of different professions, a lot of medical professionals, also education professionals, and you are also in education yourself. You're a professor.
I am, indeed. Yes.
So Kathleen teaches financial planning at the University of Oklahoma, right?
Actually, Oklahoma State University.
Oklahoma State. Dang it. Okay. Sorry. I hope the folks out there don't want to kill me. But I love the education side that Kathleen brings to conversations, because especially when we're talking about tax stuff or like employment related stuff, a lot of times like it's very technical. And if you read like IRS letterings or you're just financial planning, like deep dives, it can get really boring really fast. But I think Kathleen does a great job with bringing the soft education to these topics, if that's even a term, but like making it a little more digestible, I guess you could say.
Well, thank you.
So let's jump in. And do you want to start with just what the heck is the difference between 1099 NEC and...
Yeah. And just to clarify, the reason why we're recording on this topic is more and more we're getting clients who are asking questions about being a 1099 versus a W-2, they might be evaluating job offers and their employer is giving them a choice about whether they can be a 1099 or W-2. I also work with a number of clients like physicians and dentists, where it's very common for them to be a 1099, particularly with their locums tenens work. So this is increasingly becoming a relevant topic and really a critical decision. It involves understanding the labor laws in your state. I tell people, understanding labor laws is a very important part of financial planning. It's not taught in our CFP books, of course.
No,
but it has the power to impact your personal finances and your career decisions. So we thought this is an incredibly important topic to go over today. Now, to answer your question about the difference between 1099 and W-2 employment, I think is a really good one. Because sometimes I hear employers saying, oh, this is a 1099 employee. There is no such thing as a 1099 employee. You're either a 1099 independent contractor or you are a W-2 employee. You can't be a combination of the two for the same role within the same company. You can't be both of them. It's either or, essentially.
Right. Yeah. So they kind of mush the terms together, kind of.
Exactly. And sometimes that could be a red flag that they're probably misclassifying you if they're calling you a 1099 employee. So
yeah, right.
Got to be careful about that. Yeah.
I thought bringing Kathleen on would be awesome to talk this topic, because I literally was asking in our Slack channel, I had a client ask me, hey, I'm starting as a dentist at this new practice. They're saying I can choose if I want to be 1099 or if I want to be an employee. And I was like, huh, that's kind of odd. So I threw it to the Slack channel. I said, what should I tell this client? You know, I know there's pros and cons to both, but I didn't really think it was his decision. And Kathleen came in and dropped some bombs of knowledge on me. And I was like, oh man, yeah, this needs to be a conversation, because lots of people are getting maybe misinformation or maybe being presented the option when maybe they shouldn't have an option per se. So I'm excited for this topic.
So the difference between 1099 employment and W-2 is 1099, that number, refers to the tax form that you get every year, whatever employer you provided services or labor to is required by the IRS to send you. that reports the income you earn from the independent contractor activities. It's called a 1099-NEC. And that is what is used to report your income to the IRS when you file your taxes the following year. A W-2 employee, so W-2 refers to a different tax form that employees get also on an annual basis from their employers that reports the income they earned with that employer for the year, the tax deductions that were made, what went into Social Security, Medicare, retirement saving deductions, and things like that. When you are a 1099 independent contractor, you are considered self-employed for tax purposes. When you're a W-2, you're considered an employee. So there's pros and cons to each. There's more flexibility because if you're self-employed, that means you can do what you want, right? You can work the number of hours you want in a given week. You can decide what days of the week you want to work. You can decide what work kind of work you want to take on and what you don't want to take on. Versus a W-2 employee, you don't have that flexibility. It's basically you do what your employer tells you they want you to do. You'll work the hours they want you to work, the days of the week they want you to work and such.
There's like a role pretty much carved out for W-2 where, hey, this is your role as an employee or a contractor. Could be a couple different things. Could be, here's a project I need help with. Here's a specific task that you're specialized in doing. Here's this specific project, you know, I want for a specific period of time. So it can be a number of different things as a contractor. But yeah, I think that's a really good like breakdown between the two. Now, is it the decision, though, of the worker to be choosing between 1099 and W-2? That's the question.
Good question. And that answer is no.
Dang it.
So, yeah, that's a decision. That is not up to the employer to decide. It is not up to the employee to decide either, as I mentioned before. Your state legislature has already decided for you whether you can be classified as an independent contractor or not. So it's really imperative to research the labor laws in your state and how they define independent contractor. And this is one of the things I help clients do when they come to me with job offers and an opportunity to evaluate whether they want to be one or the other. I'll usually do like a Google search and pull up what the legislation in their respective state says about being an independent contractor. Now, there's no uniformity across the states when it comes to the definition. It's going to differ. But one of the commonalities I am seeing across the board is this aspect of control. Is the employer controlling the worker? Are they dictating how many hours you have to work a week or what days of work you have to work, what days of the week you have to work, excuse me. And often, if that's the case, you likely should be classified as a W-2 employee versus an independent contractor. And that's important to understand because if you're being misclassified as an independent contractor, you're losing out on a lot of benefits that are associated with being a W-2 employee, which we can get into at some point in this discussion. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about the like financial benefits and the financial planning aspects of like one over the other. But that's very true. Like employers generally like could, if they had a preference, it could be a lot easier to hire an independent contractor because it's less costly. It's a lot easier for them to hire a contractor. So some employers tend to do that a lot. Interestingly, so I live in Atlanta. We've got a really big CDC population or CDC campus presence here in Atlanta. And to become a federal employee, it is a process. I think anybody who works for the federal government listening to this is probably like, yeah, it took me months and months to get a federal job. And so it's almost like, to me, it seemed like what one might relate to like a residency program almost, or like an internship. That might be a better way to classify it. But there was like this ORISE fellowship program that if you were working towards being an MPH or working towards being, you know, somebody in the health profession wanting to work at the CDC, that you could work as an ORISE fellow or a contractor, essentially. And so these folks would get hired as contractors And I don't know if their orientation wasn't great, or I don't know if people just didn't listen very well, but a lot of the clients we worked with back in the day, like, we had to always make sure that they knew, like, hey, if you're going to be working as a fellow or a contractor, we have to make sure we're saving for taxes, because they're not setting aside those taxes for you like maybe you have been used to. It never failed. We always had a handful of folks that just started working with us where we had to break that news to them, like, hey, it's January and you didn't pay any taxes last year, you know, for your employment income, and you didn't save anything either. So we've got to make some plans together for getting you on track to save for taxes. But that was a very interesting introduction for me in the financial planning space, to see like how it can impact the worker if they're not sure how these classifications are different. Because if they were hired as an employee, they have those payroll deductions. They have the employer paying those taxes for them over the course of the year. And that's probably what a lot of them were used to. And so, you know, for a lot of folks listening to this, this isn't a surprise. Like, I think a lot of folks are very familiar with this, but for the couple that aren't, this is a great episode to listen to make sure you understand how being a 1099 person is different than a W-2 person. Not that it's a bad thing. It's just we have to have some other like financial considerations at play. So there's three kind of categories that the IRS has some guidance on, I guess you could say, has to do with behavioral, financial, and relationship types. And so one way you could think about this for yourself is, so on the behavioral side, does the employer control how and when you do your job? So just like you were saying, like, do they require you to be in there Monday through Friday, 9 to 5? Financial, does the employer control when and how you are paid and which expenses, if any, are reimbursed by them? So think about that from a money perspective. And then the last category is relationship type. Do you have a written contract or receive any type of benefits such as sick leave, paid vacation days, health insurance, life insurance, disability insurance? Is the relationship ongoing or finite in length? So those are some things to be thinking about to help you identify, you know, am I leaning more towards the employee here, or am I leaning more towards the contractor definition here?
That's interesting that the IRS has their own definition of what an independent contractor is or should be. And then there's the state's definition as well. And so just to bring to light the example of California, the state of California where I live, where this has been a very polarizing topic over the last few years, especially as we've seen the proliferation of rideshare companies. And many rideshare drivers, for example, are classified as independent contractors. And here in California, they've sued companies like Uber and Lyft because they think they're being improperly classified and they should be employees. And so of that came a law. For all of you California listeners out there, you might be familiar with it. It's called AB5. It's used to define what an independent contractor is. And it's three prongs to the definition. It's called the ABC test. One, the company does not control or direct what the worker does, which goes back to the IRS's definition as well. And then secondly, which I think is really interesting, is the worker performs tasks outside of the hiring entity's usual course of business. So what that means is, here in California, if you are a dentist working for a dentist office performing dentistry, you cannot be classified as an independent contractor because you are doing the work that's part of the entity's usual course of business. But we have a lot of dentists, interestingly, in California that are independent contractors.
Yeah. What do you do? So I'll pause you right there. What do you do when you do come across? Because we work with a lot of folks in California. It's a big state and it's a popular state. But do you have these conversations with clients like, hey, you might be misclassified, and like talk through what they maybe should be doing instead? How does that go?
Yeah. So I promote self-advocacy and talking to your employer, showing them the legislation that you researched, and renegotiating your employment contract, because, and we'll talk about this later on in the conversation, but there are huge risks, not only for the employee, but especially the employer, if they get caught misclassifying, or if that employee leaves and they're disgruntled and they decide to go after you because they believe they were misclassified. So yeah, I push self-advocacy, education, researching the laws, and then allowing them to make their own decision after that.
Gotcha. And so let's use that same example. Let's say this dentist, though, is specialized in anesthesiology. Maybe they're like a anesthesiologist dentist. They are a contractor. They go into different offices to just perform that task. That's definitely, to me, sounds like it falls under the contractor status, because dental offices don't, on a normal, regular basis, do maybe heavy anesthesiology. Is that right?
Exactly.
So like specialists, I could see that being very common for where you're not technically an employee, unless there's like a big partners group that you're a part of that has a bunch of you doing that for a bunch of other locations. Yeah, that sounds like a very much a contractor type of situation in that example. Interesting. Okay, and what was the last thing? You said ABC, so what was the C?
And then the third one is the worker is engaged in an independently established trade, occupation, or business. So say that same dental office hired you as a marketing person, a marketing professional to do some marketing for their business. You can be classified as an independent contractor. In that example, you have an independently established marketing business doing something that's different from the organization or the company that you're contracting with. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that does make sense. Interesting. Okay. And that's California, right?
That's
like specifically. Okay. And California generally, from just my experience, they do have more, maybe strict, I don't know if that's the right word, but just like more defined labor laws, more.
I would say
more,
strict. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We're very pro labor. Yes.
Yep. I didn't want to offend anybody or you if you're in California.
Oh,
you know?
You're absolutely right.
I think that gives us a good idea of the differences between 1099, W-2, how it's not really your decision or even the employer's decision, unless in the labor law, it's very clear one route or the other, like that's when you could be classified one or the other. So let's talk about maybe financial benefits to one or the other, and then financial downfalls to one or the other, which this is something we commonly talk about with clients because it affects like retirement savings, it affects tax savings, tax planning, that type of thing. But I'll let you take it away.
Yes. So financial benefits, let's start with the 1099. I don't know if it's, I would classify this as financial, but you do have flexibility in that you work when how much you want or how little you want, right? So you kind of have some control around how much money you make. With the W-2 employee, benefit of being classified that way is you don't have to worry about taxes or saving up for taxes like you would have to worry about if you were a 1099. When you get your paycheck and you see on your pay stub, the company or organization you work for has already deducted that for you. You also, on the W-2 side, you typically have access to some type of cafeteria benefit plan, like a 401k savings, health insurance, disability insurance, which is nice. As an independent contractor, you don't have that. You are on the hook for figuring out how you're going to pay your taxes. Okay. So saving up for that. And typically that's done by paying what we call estimated quarterly taxes. You're also on the hook for figuring out how you're going to save for retirement. Though there are a number of wonderful options that I think are actually better than W-2 employees. So accounts like the SEP IRA, the solo 401k, which as of this year, you can contribute up to $69,000 in those accounts. You can't contribute that much as a W-2 employee. So that's a huge benefit. Other differences. This is huge. As a 1099 contractor, you don't have certain rights. For example, you were protected as a W-2 employee, you were protected under discrimination laws, both federal and state, right? As a W-2 employee, your employer cannot discriminate against you because of the color of your skin or your sexuality or your religion. As a 1099, you don't have that protection. So they can get rid of you whenever they want for whatever reason. So you don't have that sense of security, financial security is lost as a 1099 versus a W-2 employee.
Yeah. Also, unemployment insurance, if you were laid off, the employer is paying into an unemployment insurance like fund with employees. And if you were to be laid off or lose your job, not due to like something malicious, like if you went and stole from the company and got fired for cause, you're not going to get unemployment insurance. But if you were let go because they, you know, profits weren't great or for like just other reasons, not due to your own fault, then you have access to unemployment insurance, which is, it's a benefit. It's something that could tie you over until the next opportunity.
Yeah. Great point. Access to these safety net programs is incredibly important depending on the state that you live in. Like California, we have a state Social Security Disability Fund that you have access to as a W-2 employee you don't have access to as an independent contractor. So again, really evaluating what you're missing out on.
Workers' comp, that's another thing that popped into my head.
Yeah.
FMLA kind of ties in with Social Security Disability. Yeah. So it's, you know, the 1099 contractor status, like there is a lot more flexibility, but it also comes with you kind of being responsible for your own things. I tell folks a lot of times, like if you're a contractor or entrepreneur, like you are the employer as well, of course, even if it's just you, but you have to build your own benefits and you have to build those protections around yourself. So a lot of times we will do sometimes comparisons, like if there's a job opportunity that is W-2 that someone wants to compare to maybe a contracting type situation, like it's not an apples to apples comparison, it's an apples to orange comparison. And there's things that we have to talk about. You know, it's not as easy as just comparing the total comp. It's comparing all those other benefits that maybe we're missing out on, and or comparing the benefit package that you can kind of build on your own yourself. Not to say that this is like super complicated and no one can figure it out. We definitely could figure it out, but it's definitely worth like thinking about a little harder before comparing something just from the top without all the details underlying.
Right. Absolutely. And to add to that, another huge financial benefit of being a W-2 employee is the Social Security and Medicare. So based on your salary, the amount that you have to contribute into Social Security and Medicare is calculated. And then as an employee, you're responsible for half of that, and your employer is responsible for the other half, which is nice. So they're helping you prepare for your future retirement and healthcare costs in retirement by contributing to these funds for you. As an independent contractor, you are on the hook 100% for Social Security and Medicare. Now, I will say, though, but half of that is deductible when you file your tax return in the following year, but you don't get that benefit to the following year. So you're still responsible for it in the current year.
Right. It's a little later. That's sometimes, too, a trigger point to start talking about, okay, well, does it make sense to be just a sole proprietor or an LLC, or should I consider an S-corp filing status? Because there could be some tax savings with filing as an S-corp where you could pay yourself wages and avoid the double taxation there on the Social Security and Medicare tax on the distributions that you're not paying yourself in wages. So there's a little bit of savings there when it comes to S-corps. It has to make sense, though. Like the income has to make sense to go that route. If you're just doing, you know, some side gig work where it's not equating to that much, you know, it's probably not worth that effort to go to an S-corp status. That could be a whole other episode, right? Now, tax forms, I want to talk about those real quick. So we talked about taxes in general, like how the employer as a W-2 person is going to be taking those taxes out and paying them for you. How does that even happen? Well, when you're getting hired as an employee, you're going to be completing a W-4. That's the tax form document, what it's called. And it's an employee's withholding certificate where you're putting your basic information, first and last name, address, tax filing status. It's going to have you go through and basically give them an idea of what maybe dependent, you know, if you have dependents, you'd list that. If you have certain deductions or if you have multiple jobs or your spouse is also working, it's going to ask you a number of questions as you go through it to help them estimate what your tax liability should be when they plug it into their payroll system. So the employer is taking those taxes. They're going off of that W-4 form that you gave them, and they're doing their best to estimate taxes over the course of the year, right? So that's why sometimes at the end of the year, when we're filing taxes come April 15th, you know, maybe you have a refund because we overpaid, or maybe we owe a little bit because we underpaid a little bit. So it's meant to do its best to get you really close to what you should be paying in tax. On the flip side, if you're 1099, there's not the W-4, but you do have a tax document yourself, and it's the W-9. And that's a tax form W-9, request for taxpayer identification number and certification. This document is really important. And actually, we brought this up in a prior episode with our podcast editor. I don't know if you know that, but we had Steve on the podcast recently, our podcast. Yeah, it was great. We talked about some tax mishaps, like with not reporting income correctly, or not having like an employer not reporting your income correctly. And it has to do with this W-9 form, because if you're a contractor, let's say you do have an S corporation, you'd want to put the S corporation's EIN number on this document if you're getting paid, if they're paying your S corporation for your services. If you're just a sole proprietor, you don't have a business entity, you would just put your social security number. But where problems happen is if the employer thinks they should be putting your social, like you've filled out the W-9 with your social, but you actually run this through, you know, an S-corp structure and you reported it under your S-corp EIN number, there's going to be a mix match. They're going to have a reporting under your social security number for income, not the EIN number. And you're going to have it under the EIN number, not your social security. So they're going to come back and say, hey, you got to fix this.
Okay. Wow.
So the W-9 is important to fill out, how you need to show the income, like where the income was flowing through. Was it flowing through just you, or was it flowing through your business entity? And put the EIN number if it was the business entity.
Interesting. So it sounds like a bit more complex when there's an S-corp involved.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, because the W-9 is an easy form. It's faster than maybe the W-4, because all it's asking for is, you know, what kind of business entity are you, if anything, and what's that EIN number, if you have one, and that's it. Where the W-4, it's a lot more involved if you want to get super detailed and give them really good numbers to estimate with. It can be quick and easy on the W-4 if your situation is pretty simple, but if you've got a lot of different things going on and you want to be thorough, it could take you a little time to do that W-4. But those are the two different tax documents that you'd be using depending on what your status is. And you can update these every year. So a lot of times employers will make you do it every year anyways, just to make sure that they're on track, and stuff changes. You know, you get married, you have kids, income is different. So it might make sense to update these on an annual basis as well to make sure. Last comment on the W-9, it's not taking taxes. Remember, it's just telling them who to send the 1099 document to and who is going to be reporting that income so the IRS can check for that income on your side. So, but that's the documents to be aware of for the tax side.
Good rundown.
So we talked about, you know, the differences between the two. We talked about how it's not really the worker's decision. It's more the state law, and there's some federal guidelines. Talked about some financial benefits, some financial cons, and maybe we could say that, the tax documents that you would need. Did we adequately talk about like the risks, you think?
One more thing I wanted to touch on, and that's, you know, the risk for the employer. Employers that are misclassifying, I think there's a good chunk of them that are not doing it intentionally. They just don't understand the respective laws in their states. But there are some, unfortunately, who are intentionally miscalculating or misclassifying, and with the intention of evading the payroll taxes and employee benefits and all of that. And so really, it's incumbent on business owners to, again, understand the laws or the legislation specific to their state. Because if you do end up misclassifying and it gets found out, either the employee reports it or the IRS finds out about it, there are some hefty consequences with that. You'll owe back taxes, you'll pay probably with interest on top of that. The IRS or the state you do business in could also levy some heavy penalties on top of that. There could be additional fines. The employee themselves could file a lawsuit against you for back pay, for attorney's costs, court costs, all of that. So it's not worth it. If you're doing it intentionally, it's not worth it.
Okay. Right. Yeah, it doesn't sound like it.
No, not at all.
Yeah, some things are not worth just winging it, you know, especially if you're hiring folks. Like if it's confusing or if it's unclear if you should be hiring a W-2 person or a contractor, it's worth the slowdown for a second to read these laws, the legislation, maybe get help with a business attorney potentially or someone to help you just identify like, hey, this is my scenario. What should I be doing? To make sure that you're good and kosher with the IRS, right? Because no one wants to anger the IRS.
Exactly. And not just that, it's also reputation risk too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cancel culture being so powerful in our generation right. These days. Nobody wants to be on the news being reported for misclassifying their employees. I think Disneyland was caught up in something like that similar a few years back. It's just not a good look. So it always pays to just do the right thing, even if it costs you more.
Yeah, that's well said. Now, before we close out, I had maybe some thoughts on a couple different scenarios that someone might be in that they want to, that might be a common scenario to just compare to what's happening in your financial life right now. So let's say this might be an interesting one, but let's say you are a W-2 employee at a hospital system. You're going for PSLF, for example. Maybe you're a physician going for PSLF, but you do some contract work for a different hospital. Maybe you're doing moonlighting. That is a scenario, right? And I think you see a lot of these scenarios where someone has a W-2 job and they get a W-2 at the end of the year, but they also have 1099 contractor income. Is that pretty common you see in like the physician or even the dental space?
Absolutely. They call it locum tenens work, I believe. Yep.
Gotcha. So just to kind of break that down a little bit, what makes that okay is the W-2 job, they're an employee there. They probably go in on a pretty specific schedule or, you know, they're told that they have to be there on certain days, where if they're working locums, they are contract in the sense of, you know, it's as needed, right? Is that how you take it? Like the difference there, how that can work is because the additional work is not as an employee. It's not working for that entity long term. It's as needed or random or opportunistic, I guess you could say. Is that maybe the best way to put it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if it's right or not, to be honest.
That's how I'm rationalizing it. Yeah. Like, because if you're filling in, right? Or if it's temporary, because that's some of the language. I know it depends on the state too, but maybe you're covering someone for, you know, they're out on maternity leave, or you're picking up one or two nights up a month just when you're called or when they need it, something like that. I could see that reasonably being like contract work versus employee work if you're doing it in conjunction with your existing job. So that's one scenario where you could be both. Contract work. So let's talk about an example there to break this down. I always love having examples, or like, are you someone who has to do it to understand it, like do the action, or like a math problem, for example, if you're trying to figure out how to do some math problem, like you have to just go through it and practice it? Or are you someone who can like listen to somebody and then go and do it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm more of the, I have to like actually talk it through, get into it, really dissect it. I don't know if that's the best way to say that, but hands on. I think that's what a normal person would say. I can't think of words today. So hands on. So talking through scenarios really helps me learn things. So thinking about a contract position, let's say, I think marketing is kind of an easy thing. Like you're hired by a law firm to do a marketing campaign around a new service that you're opening up within your practice. And they only need you really for that marketing campaign. It's going to take you however long it takes you to do. You're compensated X amount for either X amount of hours or for the delivery of the product. That is absolutely a contracting situation.
Right. This is a marketing business that's contracting with the law firm to provide marketing services.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That sounds like independent contractor to me.
And then an employee example, let's pick out like another profession. Let's say you are recently graduated from vet school, you completed a vet internship, and you want to work at a vet hospital. You are hired to be there night shift. So you're hired to be there from, you know, let's say, I'm not exactly sure what night shift hours would be, but let's just say like 6 p.m. to, you know, the next morning or something. You're doing that Monday through Thursday. So that's an employee situation. You're an employee because you're going to be there on a specific schedule. You're hired as a vet at a vet clinic, nothing specialized.
Exactly. The employer, again, is dictating when the work is to be done, what days, how many hours. That sounds like an employee to me.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, good. I think we got some examples out of the way. I think we talked about a lot of good things. Anything we missed out on mentioning?
I don't think so. I would just underscore just the seriousness of the decision, the importance of researching your state laws. And if you need support, confer with the labor law attorney. Like we always tell clients, confer with your CPA. We can't give tax advice. We can't give legal advice either. So I would definitely confer with the labor law attorney in your state if you have any questions.
Yep. That's a good suggestion. Yeah, I think this is stuff from a financial planning perspective that we talk through with clients a lot on like the financial repercussions of one way or the other, the pros and cons, and like what we could build out as your financial plan one way or the other. Kathleen is awesome. She's on our team. If you want to work with Kathleen specifically, we also do tax planning. So you could have a collaborative, cohesive experience with financial planning at SLP Wealth and tax planning, which fortunately we are booked out for 2024 taxes, but we'll be opening up for 2025 in the new year after we get 2024 filings done. We're here to help and support. Hopefully this gave you some information to just digest and prevent maybe some mistakes early on that you could kind of correct now. If you haven't been saving for taxes and you're a contractor, make sure to start doing that. Absolutely going to have to pay those taxes come tax time. But I think that wraps things up nicely. Thank you, Kathleen, so much for joining me today and helping break this kind of complicated topic down. And I hope everybody listening has a lovely weekend coming up, and we'll catch you on the next one.
What if you could get fiduciary financial planning specific to your profession that's student loan aware that could change your life for a price much better than you ever dreamed possible? If that sounds good to you, go to slpwealth.com/pod for a free, no obligation 15-minute intro call with one of our own fiduciary financial planners to see if we could be a good fit for you. This podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered individualized investment advice. If a specific investment is mentioned, do not consider it a recommendation to buy or sell the investment. Seek first advice from a financial professional before implementing any strategies discussed. All investments involve risk, and past performance does not guarantee future results. Yay, compliance.